Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Shelley Wade, and today we are talking about a group of African-American engineers who helped build the Alaska-Canada Highway. In the studio today, and my guests are Gene Pollard and Bishop Dave Thomas from the Alaska Highway Project. Welcome, folks. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we have a whole bunch of information that we want to share for you on our website, but also the folks at the Alaska Highway Project have a website. And so Gene's going to talk just a little bit later about all those good resources. So also for folks that are listening here in Anchorage, we would really like to hear your questions and your comments and maybe even hear you tell your stories about your experience on the Alaska-Canada Highway and how this brings up some different experiences for you. So if you're calling from Anchorage, you can call us at 550-8433, outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752, or you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So as I mentioned earlier, you folks at the Alaska Highway Project have a website, and there are a tremendous number of resources on that website. And Gene, you want to tell us just a little bit about what folks could find there?
Okay. In the first start, you open up, there should be is information about the dedication that we just had in September.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. We it was September 25th, and they honored what the soldiers did by putting up three benches at the Cuddy Family Park, which is an awesome, like, park.
Yeah.
And they had a little inscription about them, about what they did, and it's just really brief. And they also honored us by putting our names there, that we would bring this to their attention. And there's a reason behind, anyway, the attention, but that's part of what they'll see. The other picture you should see is two soldiers, one white, one black, shaking hands. That's very significant, because now they're saying that we can also put up a monument. And I want the monument to represent that picture, because that picture represents integration.
Okay, that's great.
Yes.
That's great. So we're going to talk a little bit later about the actual memorial and I think your vision for that. But there,
right.
You have other resources on your website that folks could find?
There are some books that we mentioned up there, so they want to get more research as well, that are not necessary, because I checked with the Lusac Library. And I'm talking to them, by the way, about getting more books in about the highway. So we are working together. But there are resources there for that. They would also see then just some pictures up there.
Great.
About what we have been doing as well and where we're going. And let me see what else there would be. Like information about the soldiers, what they went through. And that's the part that I want to zero in. And the hardships and the triumphs as well.
Okay, so we're going to talk a lot about that today. So folks, Gene just described for us some great resources that you can find on the Alaska Highway Project website. We're going to post that link. It's a long link, so we're not going to say it out loud right now, but you can find it on our website at alaskapublic.org, as well as a couple of other resources on the Alaska Highway Project. So before we talk more about the memorial and your vision for that, we really just wanted to learn a little bit more about kind of the scene and the history of the time. So to just get folks in the understanding of what's going on in U.S. history at this period of time. So this is 1942. Before we talk specifically about the African-American regiments, can you guys help set the scene for us? So, specifically the year and really what's happening on the social scene?
Social yeah. scene was, yeah. It was segregation. Jim Crow laws was being enforced down in the South. And many of these soldiers, were from the South. So they joined the United States Army to fight during World War II. But when they came into the Army, they found out that segregation was even in the Army. They were segregated from the whites. They could not work with the whites, eat with the whites. So it was just they found out that it was the same type of laws in the U.S. Army that it was back home. But they did their jobs with respect and honor, no matter what was put before them at the time. So the social scene was a very bleak social scene, but they persevered through that.
So the social and political climate at the time, just across the United States, was, as you're saying, you know, Jim Crow system
right.
is in place. And can you describe for us a little bit more, Bishop Thomas, what was the Jim Crow system?
Well, the Jim Crow system was, as it deployed African Americans, and I wrote it down here, so I wanted, because I knew that was one of the highlights that we wanted to talk about, what that system was. It just really forced blacks to be segregated away from whites.
Can you add anything, Jean?
Yeah, one thing they said, like separate but equal.
And right.
It was
right.
separate. Part of it was right, mm-hmm. but it was not necessarily equal. And that's the part that they noticed, you know, that it was not, they were still considered subhuman. And so the separate but equal part, where there were signs, colored only, white only, and even, I mean, not just in living, but even in death. They couldn't even be buried in the same cemetery. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So everything was basically, they were, you know, going
separate.
To separate. Yeah.
That's public schools, thing. Public places, everything. Public transportation everywhere, the restaurants, mm-hmm. the restrooms, mm-hmm. drinking fountains, where she said white and black. So even in the United States Army, they were separate from the whites.
Okay.
And this is how we got involved, okay? Because what I didn't know is, I suppose it's okay if I mention this now, jumping
yeah.
in. What I didn't know about the Alaska Highway, I just thought when I grew up here that, it, you know, everybody, all the soldiers were working. And the part that got my attention is when I realized that, no, it was not like that separate but equal. Was so much in operation then that only the blacks, the 97th Unit, actually came into Alaska to finish heading the road towards Canada. And with the bulldozer, and that then the white units were in Canada heading towards Alaska. And that was the significant part. And then to find out, I'm working with Canada, we are, okay, to find out that every year since 1942, Canadians have been not only honoring the soldiers for what they've done, but they have been having reunions. Amazingly, they have been able to keep in touch with their soldiers. And we have not, in Alaska, been honoring what the soldiers did in Alaska.
So the African American regiments were working from Alaska toward Canada,
right.
Right.
And the white regiments were working the other direction,
right.
Just meeting
right.
each other. Wow. So
in segregation, that was what.
Yeah.
Separate but equal.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Me
part
neither.
Of the story,
that's the,
so.
That's what make this very interesting.
Well, let's talk a little bit more yeah. about the soldiers themselves. So you mentioned, Bishop Thomas, that most of them, you know, were from the South. So let's know a little bit more about, you know, who these men were. How old were they? I mean, really, you know, did they have families back home?
They were mm-hmm. from 18 to the late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
They had families back home.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, many of them was from Florida, mm-hmm. South Carolina, the southern states.
Right.
So they wanted to go to the military. They thought would be a better life, but when they found out that his segregation was in the military, you know, they had to really just deal with what was put before them. They had a lot of families back home. When many of them was released from the military, some stayed in Alaska and started families.
Mm-hmm.
And some left overseas to fight mm-hmm. World War II
mm-hmm.
in Germany.
Right.
And then when they got out in Germany, they stayed there because it was no
right.
segregation in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
They were young soldiers,
mm-hmm.
young soldiers.
So what kind of training did they have? So they were engineers and
they were engineers mainly, back then, during the, World War II, many of the blacks went into, the engineers and low paying, or low, demeanor jobs in the military. They didn't go into the infantry until after Lee Truman signed the bill of desegregating the United States Armed Forces. Then they started going to the combat units because, remember, they didn't want blacks killing whites.
And what year was that bill signed?
That was 1944. 1944,
yeah. Okay.
1944. Yeah.
What?
The bill that Truman signed for the desegregation of the United States Army.
1944.
1948.
Okay. Okay, so Gene,
I got the educated
us.
Here. Come on.
Okay, Gene. Right. Gene corrects it. So
1948.
So how this particular group of soldiers, of black soldiers, of engineers, how did they get assigned to this? This seems like a pretty unique project, the Alcan project. So how did they end?
They
up in
needed
this?
More Wait, soldiers.
No, finish it.
Go ahead, Gene. Thank you.
Oh, it's just they just. They had they wanted to have it completed in, they said 2 years, and then they realized that they weren't going to get it completed in that much time with the short number of units because they needed more soldiers. And that's how they end up going to, with there were three, well, actually four in a way, but the all-black unit to bring them in. Mm-hmm. And when they were going to, and now remember the excitement perhaps by coming to Alaska, you know why? They weren't thinking of the coal at the time, but going north. That's what we were talking about. Going north. Everything going north was supposed to be like integration. Remember?
Right.
That's what the Underground Railroad, go north,
right.
Follow the North Star. So it was an excitement at first, of course, not knowing what, thinking, like you said, that they thought it'd be more freedom.
Right.
And that was the idea. But anyway, so through that, though, just because of the situation and so forth, they needed more. And that's how they end up going to choosing to have them come here. And then, of course, they had to continue to stay segregated because the general at the time, Bunkner, named after Bunkner Fieldhouse, at that time he felt that because to keep the segregation, not to let them mix with the Indians or the natives or the whites, or go into the cities or the towns. And this is fact. I mean, it's documented.
Right.
And so that's how that ended up as far as, they needed more, but it wasn't like what they thought it was going to be.
Okay. So maybe the one thing we haven't mentioned yet is just what was the purpose of the Alaska-Canada Highway Project? So why was that
To get supplies, because we knew that the Japanese wanted to invade a second time because they invaded Pearl Harbor, where they bombed Pearl Harbor. They was looking for a route to invade the U.S., and they knew that the closest route would be Alaska. So we had to open up the supply lines to get supplies to our troops. So that was the whole dealing with us building that highway there. Although they did evade the Aleutian Islands, which was one of the bloodiest fights during World War II. So that was the reason why the Alcan Highway was initially brought about.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I am your host, Shelley Wade. And today in the studio with me are Gene Pollard and Bishop Dave Thomas of the Alaska Highway Project. And we are talking about the African American regiments that helped build the Alaska-Canada Highway. And if you have a comment or a question for Gene or for Bishop Thomas, give us a call here in Anchorage at 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752, or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And as I mentioned earlier, we're getting the website link up for the Alaska Highway Project up onto the alaskapublic.org website. So you should be able to access and download and take a look at a lot of great pictures. And then one of the other things that you're going to find on that website that I wanted to mention is a poem that Gene has written called Two Roads to Civil Rights, A Poetic History of the Alaska Highway. Gene, you want to just describe to us a little bit about how you developed this and what is the poem about?
I wanted to have a poem that really illustrated what was going on at that time and how this came about. And therefore, in doing the research, and as I was reading different things, I thought, wow, everything I read, I think they should know this, they should know that, they should know this. And so from there, then I decided, well, why not? They had asked me to do a poem anyway, and there were other thoughts about writing it this way and that way. But then as I was writing it, then it also came to me about how they, because of what they did, they really built the road, for civil rights. And I was thinking about that. And then I began to think about Martin Luther King, how he had marched on the road for civil rights, and that's how the title came up, Two Roads Towards Civil Rights. But in thinking about everything that I listed in there, about the hardships, 70 below zero, the mosquitoes, I mean, this is all that they mentioned in their workload, the hours, getting equipment that was not even, and the clothing wasn't even suitable. It was for the temperature. The temperatures, the clothing they had was meant for weather like 40 degrees, period. And they were in temperatures 70 below. So they were also getting equipment that was should have been for salvage, like just, you know, had to sometimes use a pickaxe, and it was all there. And I thought, wow, you know, every time I kept writing, I thought, they need to know this, they need to know this. Yeah. And that's how I ended up making it into a poetic poem about the history.
Yeah, and so again, the title, we love the title, Two Roads to Civil Rights, A Poetic History of the Alaska Highway. And so, Jean, because you just mentioned the conditions, I thought it would be great for our listeners to hear this one piece of your poem. His clothing was unsuitable for the harsh climate, as well as the cloth tent that he used. Though his white counterparts resided in Quonset huts, he did not rebel at being abused. So I'd like to talk a little bit more about, you know, the working conditions that African American troops were endured during this period as they're building this, as you say again in your poem, you know, a road that would be compared to the building of the canal in Panama.
Uh-huh. Right.
That's really,
they compared it.
I know. That's amazing.
It is. And that's what it said in the story too. I mean, so I was putting all this together. They said it was amazing how they were able to do it with little equipment and the weather and their clothing. That was a miracle in itself. And that they could pull that off. And the other part was great that they had a chaplain that was with them, and he would pray with them every morning. And the reason why I'm sharing that, because one of the officers, he was a white officer, he noted that they never, ever showed any, like, signs of distress, anger, resentment, you know, and that's why I had to put that in, too. They knew that they were being mistreated, but they never, like, were trying to fight back or retaliate. They just did their job. And they were at first accused before they came. They were saying, well, we don't know we can have them here because the blacks are not used to cold weather. They perhaps won't be able to do well. They were not maybe not be able to use the equipment and all these negative things. And they surpassed. In fact, they, because of what they did, they were able to complete it in 8 months, much sooner than what they expected. And there's a statement where they did this bridge, and it's a story where they had gone over and during the night, somehow they got a hold of this bulldozer equipment that they weren't supposed to have. It wasn't for them. And they were able to finish up their work. And what they said, they made a statement that they said, just think what we could have done if we would have had real equipment ourselves.
Yeah. Like maybe 4 months.
Right. Yes,
yeah, exactly.
They made a statement like that. So it was just amazing how they were able to do it.
And the extreme weather, negative 70.
Talk a little bit
negative
about that.
70 degrees in the, I believe it was a couple of soldiers lost their lives on both sides, the white side and the black side.
Well, a total, they said, of 100 soldiers.
Yeah,
so that's not bad.
Lost their lives.
Before 11,000.
And in the wintertime, it was just so cold, you know.
Yeah.
I lived in Fairbanks. I was stationed at Fort Wainwright.
That's where I grew up.
Yeah. So, you know, I was stationed at Fort Wainwright, and it gets pretty cold up north, even in Canada. But, and not only that, just in the summertime, the bird mosquitoes.
I know.
You know how big the mosquitoes are up north. Yeah. They had to deal with that. They had to make their own mosquito nets, and they the mud, the wilderness just itself, the animals, the bears, every little thing that you would think about that's in the woods, they encountered. So I mean, the working conditions was poor, but they still endured.
Yeah, and tell about, this is one question, the reason I had been asked, I didn't know that, but him being a veteran and military, he would know about how they were able to use like the restroom.
The restroom, you have to, even in that type of climate, they had a point where they dug trenches to go to use a restroom. You know, far away from the camp, so you wouldn't get sick or nothing. So that's what, basically, how to use a restroom, you know, in the woods. I mean, there wasn't no restrooms there.
I'm guessing the listeners out there are wondering, you know, what was a day like? So, you know, they completed this thing, and you're saying 8 months, Jean. Mm-hmm. That seems astronomically fast. Mm-hmm. So what would, Bishop Thomas, could you describe for us, you know, what would be a day like?
A day like would be wake up, eat, and go to work until sundown.
Yeah.
Basically. they worked from sun up to sundown.
Contending with all of those physical constraints that
exactly,
you were talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I wonder, you talked about this a little bit, Gene, when you said that, you know, the segregation went as far as, you know, the African-American regiments working from Alaska toward Canada and the white regiments working from Canada towards Alaska. So what was, but I did hear, though, you mentioned there were some white and black troops that were in the same place. So what was that working relationship like?
That was in the bridge, I believe, that because some were there working, but still they were considered less. It doesn't matter because they weren't still given respect, none of them at all. You know, there was just there was one general, I believe his name is Twitchell, I'm not sure.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, and he gave them like they were awesome, like praise, like they were. He's trying to tell them they're wonderful. And speaking of that, I have to maybe take this point to share about this, give you an idea of what someone said about them when you asked me about how they were treated. Okay, there's a woman. I have her notes a little bit.
Please.
Her name is, give her credit, Leah L A E L Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
She's phenomenal, and she was hired. She came up on the Alaska Highway. She drove up with her husband, 1959. She was a reporter, a journalist, and she's also working at UAF.
Mm-hmm.
But the National Geographic had hired her to do a story on the African-American soldiers. She began to tell the truth, which was positive, a nice story. But that's not what they wanted. So according to her, and I spoke to her, they wanted it to be the way that negative, what, you know, people would, they had
so this is, Gene, you're talking about the folks that had hired her to do the piece?
Yes.
Requested that it was a negative spin on.
Right.
Okay.
And she refused to do that, so therefore she was fired. And after being fired, then her research, she was not able to use it or mention it in a book or do anything with it. It's there in the archives at UAF. So the research is there still. And because I'm sharing this with you, I saw her on a history channel that was aired about the Alaska Highway. And I didn't know whether she was still living or not, but I was able to contact her and find her. Not still living in Maine because she was here, but back in Maine. And I spoke to her about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and guess what? We talked, and she said that it seems now they're ready to hear my story, or hear the rest of the story. And she was glad that we were doing this. So she drove by herself this past summer up the Alaska Highway. She went after all these years. Isn't it amazing to come back to help see this get out? And it's to tell the truth.
So I want to come back to that a little bit later, Gene, just the whole idea of how this part of Alaska history has not been incorporated in the things, you know, I learned or, you know, other young Alaskan folks learn in their history classes. You know, when you're growing up in elementary and middle and high school, you don't really learn about this part of Alaska history. But before we do that, I did just want to come back again to maybe the soldiers themselves and talk specifically about, you know, so Gene, you mentioned that actually you've been in contact with some of the relatives of some of these gentlemen that served. So what else do we know about life after for these black soldiers that were worked on the highway? Did they stay? You said, Bishop Thomas, some of them stayed in Alaska. Mm-hmm. Some of them went on to do other things. So how many of these folks do we know stayed in Alaska and
well, see,
their families?
That's the negative part, that we don't have the contact, like I said, with Canada, how they did. Now, because of Leah Morgan, the lady I mentioned, in 1992, she did, was one of the ones, say, orchestrated to allow a 50-year celebration anniversary in Fairbanks. And at that time, I believe they were able to get maybe 10 or 12 men. Now, you're talking about over 4,000, and 50 years later, and 10 or 12 men. So that, because they were not keeping records and following through, where, again, comparing with Canada, they were able to do that. And so for that reason, what as far as the life, you know, what happened, there's not a lot of information. Now, I did contact one family. It was the great niece actually I got in touch with. And unfortunately, she said two things. One, that her great uncle had died like 8 months before, number one. And then number two, I had asked her questions about, did you ever talk to him about this information? And she said, oh, no, you know, I knew he mentioned he was in it, but it wasn't like, you know, a big deal, big interest. We didn't really discuss it. So she couldn't give me any information at all, which is sad, you know. And then there's the family here that I'm aware of. And likewise, I had the grandfather's picture and everything, but they couldn't tell me anything significant, you know, about what he said. And it's not, I suppose that would be uncommon. I say that because there's a lot of times, I think, because they were not recognized, they thought it wasn't important. We did our job, it's no big deal. Some maybe have been upset and angry that they weren't recognized and didn't want to talk about it. So that's what really came, that's the negative part. But I still believe we're not giving up. I still believe there are others that are still living. They perhaps be 90 years old, 89, 90, 91, and they're out there. And hopefully, the reason why we hope we can get this out, because then that way they hear about it somehow and like, oh, I was in that unit. I did this. That wasn't me. Or that was my grandfather. Maybe somebody knows, and it will come and will come forth and they'll find some more.
Yeah, so the work that you're doing is really important. And so
it's Alaska history.
Yeah.
It happened.
So we are going to take just a short break. And when we come back, we're going to hear more from Gene Pollard and Bishop Thomas from the Alaska Highway Project. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm Shelley Wade.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm your host, Shelley Wade. And today we are talking with Gene Pollard and Bishop Dave Thomas of the Alaska Highway Project. And we are learning about a part of Alaska history and really U.S. history that a lot of folks just aren't aware of. And that is about the African-American engineers who helped build the Alaska Highway. So before we left for a break, we were talking about, you know, specific individuals and, you know, what do we really know as follow-up to what these folks are doing today? And Gene said, you know, maybe there's a few of them that are a few folks that are still alive that actually served as part of these troops that helped build the Alaska-Canada Highway. But we're just, this project is really important. We're just learning a lot more about it. And so, Bishop Thomas, I understand that you took a trip to Canada and had a chance really to interact with folks that have actually celebrated this part of history.
Yes, went over to Canada the last 3 years. I would go over there every May. Our Memorial Day, we would go over there to celebrate the soldiers' accomplishments in Canada. Fort Nelson and Canada, where they built a bridge called the River Bridge. They built this bridge. I believe Gene talked about it when they was using pickaxe. They built it. They betted their paychecks that they could build this bridge in 24 hours or so. And they built this bridge over a river. I went down to the river. We had a ceremony down there. We laid a wreath. We also laid a wreath at the camp where the black soldiers was staying. Where they segregated the black soldiers in Canada. They couldn't sleep in the same camp with the white soldiers. So I went on the land, and the guy there was asking if we wanted to buy the land. But we did a ceremony there on the land. We laid a wreath. I talked to also the officials of the town. They're going to build a memorial over there for the black soldiers, the 75th anniversary. The Alcan Highway. They'll be building a memorial there. They're looking for us to come this May, but we're looking for funding to go. The last 3 years I paid and I went over there myself, but we're looking for funding to go. If it opens up, we'll go this May. If not, we'll wait till the 75th, which is only a couple of more years. So,
2014, is that right?
75th, no, I think it's 2017 or 16.
Oh, that's right. 2017. Right, okay, so the 75th.
Right.
75th.
So there, on the Canada side, there's already a lot of development.
Oh, yeah. I talked to the community officials, and it's all laid out and lined up. So
what community is that in?
Fort
St. John.
Fort St. John, British Columbia.
Okay.
And we have the contact. It's amazing, like, what they're doing. And so we have, it's amazing. We have partnered with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it used to be, which shocked me, because it used to be called Alcan, by the way, Alaska Highway in Alaska, Canadian. But they said, and they corrected me, and they said, we don't use Alcan anymore. And I didn't know that either. And the reason why, they said, because it's the road to Alaska, not the road to Canada. And so they decided to, you know, call the Alaska Highway, period, which is nice. Yeah.
So, folks, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and we're talking about African-American engineers who helped build the Alaska Highway. Mm-hmm. So I'll stand corrected, probably, because I'll use Alcan for the rest of my life.
I know, but we just found it out this year.
Yeah. So if you have a question for Gene or for Bishop Thomas, they sure would like to hear it. They're from the Alaska Highway Project. You can call us in Anchorage at 550-8433, outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752, or please email us at hometownalaskapublic.org. So, Gene, I was hoping that you could read us a segment, probably like your favorite verse there from your, and I think the whole thing is just amazing. So this might be a tough request, but I was hoping.
Okay, there's 17 like stanzas. Could I do six? No, that's too many.
How about two?
Ooh, wow.
That sounds good.
Okay, well, then I just have to hit the, this is a difficult one.
Yeah, there's one in particular that I thought was really, that describes the conditions.
Well, the one I like, but it describes, it's where he showed camaraderie by his strong work ethics and his tenacity to forge ahead. He showed strength when at 60 below, the frozen ground and snow was his bed. Mm. Okay, and then to end it, maybe, last one, is we honor the African-American Army engineers because they endured the freezing cold nights and the cruel heat of injustice to build the road towards civil rights.
Thank you for reading that, Gene.
There's more.
And there is more. And so I wanted to point out again that on alaskapublic.org, we do have a link to the Alaska Highway Project website. So I would invite you to check out that website, and you'll find Gene's poem there, which is how many stanzas again?
17.
17.
And it's published now in the magazine. And so it's, you'll see Bishop Dave Thomas also has an article, that article in the
Tell us a little bit about that, Bishop.
The
Thomas.
One about the that's
I didn't know nothing about
Canada,
this.
Canada.
This is a surprise. I was laying a wreath at the memorial there in Canada, and so I didn't even know I was in the magazine until now.
See,
so that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
And
that's
so
great.
When I went over last May, I laid a wreath at the memorial where the Black Soldiers Memorial will be.
Yeah,
on the 76.
So you were featured in the magazine.
Yes, all right.
So we have a caller. Hey, we have a caller on the line.
Welcome
to Hometown Alaska, Stu.
Hey, this is an interesting show. I was wondering, the Layard River and Layard Hot Springs. Was that something on the route that was built by the troops, and did they get to use the hot spring?
So that's the Laird Hot Springs, L-A-I-R-D.
No. Not that I know of, no.
Yeah, it looks like Bishop Thomas and Gene are both not quite sure.
Right. But he's, because he's been there, he would know more.
Think,
yeah, he was there.
No, because every year we would normally go towards Fort Greeley at the visitors' place there where they have the visitors' depot there. We lay a wreath there. We go to the Black Soldiers' Veterans Black Soldiers Bridge that Senator Davis, she nominated that bridge to be the Black Soldiers Bridge. So the Hot Springs wouldn't be a spot where they would even probably even went around. I mean, and okay. I know they didn't go hot springing. So,
does that answer your question, Stu?
Yeah, and I was also wondering, how many diaries do you have from people who were involved in the project?
I do not have a copy, but I understand there is a book that has several stories that they have written. Oh, yeah. Yes, that part. And so that's what we're still in this part of this research. I do have that. Well, I don't have it, but I'm aware of it.
So is that the book, Gene, that was written by William Griggs?
No, his was pictorial. I bought his. Okay. And he's since deceased, of course, about 5 years ago. It hasn't been a long, long time, but I did buy his book.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Stu.
Thank you.
So the book that I just mentioned, the book by William Griggs, does tell, like you were mentioning,
right,
is a pictorial version. Mm-hmm. And we do have a link to that particular resource on the alaskapublic.org website as well. So we have a second caller on the line. Margie, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I just happened to tune in and heard you talking about this. I just finished reviewing a book for the Cordova Times called The Black Soldiers Who Built the Alaska Highway. Mm-hmm. It's written by John Virtue.
Yes, I have his book, too.
He's a former United Press International
right.
reporter, mm-hmm. and he is on the faculty of Florida International University.
Right.
And it's, I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it's a very well-written, very detailed book, a lot of photos, and I think it ought to be required reading for anybody studying Alaska history.
Thanks so much, Margie. It sounds like Gene has a thought for you.
Yes, I have been in contact with him for the past 2 years, mm-hmm. and as well as Bishop Dave Thomas. We have spoken to him. In fact, he had told me that his book would be coming out in December. And uh-huh. And I heard of him from, I don't know if you were listening prior, but I heard from him from a lady named Leah Morgan. She introduced me to him, actually, and put me
she's
in touch with him.
A friend of mine, yeah.
Who is?
She's a friend. She just said she's...
Oh, really?
I kind of met John on a chat group of former United Press International reporters.
Wow.
And when he mentioned the book, I said I'd like to review it. And it just worked well because got the review done in time for Black History Month.
Well, right, yes. Did you know?
It's an amazing book. I tell you, when every time I've driven that highway, I just wondered how they built it. Now I know.
I know. Isn't that amazing? Did you know that she was driven back up to Alaska?
Pardon?
That Leah Morgan, have you seen her since she came back to Alaska?
Well, she's out of state right now, but she'll be back.
Oh, yes, she is. I spoke to her 2 days ago, yes.
Well, that's great. What a great connection that
Amazing.
We made on the line. Well, Margie, thank you so much for your call and for highlighting that resource for us.
Okay, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. So, folks, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and we're having a really exciting conversation about African-American engineers who helped build the Alaska Highway. And my guests today are Gene Pollard and Bishop Dave Thomas from the Alaska Highway Project. So we just mentioned, and our last caller, Margie, just mentioned, you know, this should just be required. Mm-hmm. This book that she has reviewed for the Cordova Times, this should be required reading for anybody growing up in Alaska. And so... Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk a little bit more just about that concept of, you know, documenting this part of our history.
Right.
And in particular, Gene, you mentioned earlier the work of Lael, and maybe we'll be seeing some of her work mm-hmm. released later. And that was sort of a UAF kind of a research project. But, you know, what about future plans for introducing this important part
Perfect.
Of history in either our school curriculum or college textbooks? Tell us.
Yes, this is what we are planning to do. I have spoken to Pam Orme. She is at the Anchorage School District. She's a coordinator director for all the history of, you know, not just Alaska history, but history in the books. And so, in speaking with her, and she was at our ribbon cutting dedication as well, she was very impressed, very excited, to the point as far as this is the way, and eventually the long-term goal is that to put together a curriculum to put it, have it in the school, third grade, middle school, and high school, get it in the curriculum so that they will learn the truth about the Alaska Highway.
Yeah, because, you know, that's definitely a part of the history
it
of
is.
Alaska that I didn't learn. And I guess I would say in general, I didn't learn a lot about Alaska in general growing up in Alaska. But even in the history class that I took in college at UAF, just, you know, on the history of Alaska, this component was missing, which makes me think, are there other parts of Black history, Alaska history, that we're unaware of? Are there other stories in addition to the story about the Black regiments that built the Alaska Highway?
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm not right. I mean, if I do some more research, I'm sure I'll find something like
that. Yeah. Well, yeah, it has to be. If
right.
it was Blacks here,
yeah.
then it's
yeah.
history.
Because
history in the church, history in the community, history in the businesses, history in law, everything.
Just in the community,
know.
But, you know, the Blacks that came up here to live, in fact. But like Leah Morgan, speaking with her, she actually, because she, like I told you, she did the research, right, and was kind of barred from really printing it. But she said on the History Channel, and to me, she said that it was deliberately, this is how she phrased it, like deliberately, we were deliberately written out of history. And I spoke to her just 3 or 4 days ago out of state, and I said, I would like to bring your name up and mention that. And she said, please do. Like, you know, sure.
Yeah.
And I was given permission. But she said it openly herself. It's not a secret. And so, there may, like you said, there may be more because it's just something it wasn't written down, it wasn't talked about. So now here we are trying to go back and find out who's still out there, who's still living, the ancestors, you know, that we can find information because this is a part of Alaska history.
Yeah. So I wanted to go ahead and talk specifically about the work that you're doing on the memorial. So you had this great celebration on September 25th of last year. So I wanted you to just take us back a little bit, Jean, before that ceremony. And how did that project even get started? I mean, you talked a little bit about that at the beginning, but how did you guys come together? And, you know, who are the other partners that have been working with you to develop this really important work?
Well, go back to the two of us went to meet Beth Norm. And she's director of like, the Anchorage Park Foundation.
Beth Norland.
Right,
okay.
Norland, yes. And she, and so in reality, when we spoke to her about it, she, same thing, had not heard it either. And we showed her, he pulled out, you know, was able to show her the website, not the website, the, what was it?
DVD.
PBS. Like history.
Oh, the PBS documentary.
Yeah, he let her show
okay.
her that. And so she was like, wow. I mean, really excited, like, again. And so, yes, you know, this is something that we should do. She got really excited talking about how, you know, we could also eventually have a talking, like a tree. Was it like a something like where we could put up like a monument or something like that? They could push the button and hear a little bit of history about what happened then. Things like that. I mean, this is all the excitement
and
going
interactive
on. And talking,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Just like, wow, yeah. So from there then we started saying, well, we want some way to honor and give them recognition because of what they did. And it's never, I wouldn't say never, nothing's been done, but it happened in Fairbanks and it was like over, like, you know, nothing. It's just gone. So we want to continue. It's something that we feel should be celebrated, you know, every year. You got to keep it before the people, let them know about their history. That's what you have to do. So anyway, through that, we started saying, okay, could we, you know, we started looking around, I want to put up something. And this is how then I started driving around town and looking around. And I remember calling Bishop Dave Thomas and said, I found the spot. I got it. This is it. And share with him. And then we both went back to Beth Norton and said, hey, we got it. You know, we want to have, you know, the benches. We want to put up 3 benches representing these units. And that's excitement going, so okay. And she said, oh, we can do that. That's easy, you know, because they need more benches out there anyway, so it'd be perfect. So that's how that part came up. And then it didn't stop there, the excitement on. And then that's when she had shared with us that, you know, we gotta like do some little more, like a monument. This was a sort of like a ribbon cutting, like a awareness. But let's like go a little further.
Do something bigger.
Yeah.
So I want to hear about your real vision for this project. But we have an excited caller on the line. Hi, Charles. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. long time Alaskan, 52 years.
What's that, Charles?
Yeah, I've been in Alaska 52 years.
Yeah. And it looks like you've had a little bit of experience on the Alaska Highway, huh?
Quite a bit of experience hauling equipment over the highway back in the 60s and early 70s. And what the improvement has been made in through the 1980s.
So did you know this part of the history of the highway and how it was constructed?
No, I didn't have no history of the highway except drive it after it was temporarily completed.
Mm. Okay.
But I've driven heavy equipment over the highway, bought heavy truck, bought new equipment over the highway back in 70 and 75 and through 75.
So does this part of the history surprise you then, Charles?
Yes. Yes, I have. And the highway, when I used to drive over it, that highway was what you call a death trap.
It was a dangerous highway.
It took the strong to survive it.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for your call, Charles.
Could he call back and leave his number?
Thanks, Charles. Thank you so much for your call. So, wow, that's so. It sounds like Charles saw just how dangerous
right.
it was. So, if you could just imagine probably the conditions,
then,
multiply
it
times
oh, yeah.
how many for
oh,
actually
yeah.
constructing the highway
in the middle of the winter.
Yeah, exactly. So we have another caller on the line. Richard, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hey, thank you. I wanted to say, this is an important part of Alaskan history, but there's attempts out there, and I thank Ms. Pollard and the Bishop Thomas out there. I've met them through my previous employer, who was Senator Biddy Davis. And, we did all we could to try to put that out there, through the legislature in front of people. When she was in the House, she did a citation honoring them, and I believe it was probably the 50th year at that point in time, and we discovered that Mr. Griggs had not been noted in that previous one in the 90s, so we went back and did another citation specifically for him.
Really know
we were able to get it to his son, and it was presented by Senator Begich back in D.C., so we've tried to keep the honors going, and of course we were part of the project over there in the through the park and Beth Nordland with that bench and the oral history, hopefully in the future. So
yeah, well, thank you so much, Richard. It sounds like Bishop Thomas would like to say hi.
Nice to hear your voice again, Richard.
Well, thank you. It's good to hear that that this is being highlighted again, because this is a very important project.
Oh yeah, very important, and we just thank we thank you and Senator Davis' office for all y'all have done for us. And hopefully we could work with you again on the project in the future.
That'd be great. I'd love to.
All right.
Thank you so much for your call, Richard. And actually, it sounds like Jean's got a word for you, too.
Well, yeah. She asked us about partners, and in addition to the Anchorage Park Foundation, that's where Senator Betty Davis would come in. She's a partner with us and still is a partner with us, even though she's not in that position, but she's there, she's got our back.
Okay.
Good. I just saw her this afternoon. So.
Yes.
All right.
Well, thank you for calling, Richard. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye. So if you're just tuning in, folks, you're listening to an exciting show on Hometown Alaska, and we are talking about the African American engineers who helped build the Alaska Highway. So if you still have comments or questions and you haven't had a chance to share those with us, please call us in Anchorage at 550-8433, outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752, or you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So before we had a couple exciting calls, Jean, you were describing for us really the existing memorial, and then Richard just mentioned again that same memorial. And there's maybe more to come. You say you have a vision for how this could look, something more significant, a monument perhaps. You want to describe that for us?
Yes, I would like to have the monument made from the picture of the private Refined Sims Jr., who was a bulldozer technician with the 97th Engineers, and also there was Private Alfred Jalupka, who was the lead driver from the 18th Union of the Engineers. And now Private Sims, he was a black soldier at the time, and Alfred Jalupka was a white soldier. And therefore, the two of them, when their bulldozers met, one coming from Alaska and one coming from Canada, when they met, they got out and shook hands. That picture meant worldwide then, but I wanted to still go worldwide now because it brought about, or was like a symbol of integration. Mm-hmm. White soldier, black soldier. Mm-hmm. 1942, 1943, well, when they finished actually, shaking hands, coming mm-hmm. together, that was very significant. So that's the monument. That's how I like it to be sculptured, that particular picture. And behind that, like, they have like a half wall behind that, which would list all 4,000 names of those African-American soldiers that were in Alaska and actually worked on the Alaska Highway.
Yeah.
And the other part, you know, in reality, I realized that, I mean, it was up in Fairbanks. And so now Bishop Dave Thomas can tell you about that part where he saw and what we have met with some of them in Fairbanks and share with them what they can do to get this particular item for their monument.
Okay. They're at Fort...
Fort Wainwright?
Not Fort Wainwright, but the other fort up there.
Eielson Air Force Base?
Delta Junction. Junction at the Visitor Center.
Okay.
Behind there in the field, they still have bulldozers.
Isn't amazing?
About five or four bulldozers. I think it's on our website, too.
That were used for the Alaska
that
Highway.
That were used. Yeah. What they would do when they break down, they would get out and leave them, go on to the next one,
yeah.
And they just leave them there. We talked to the mayor there one year. I talked to the mayor there. I said, we need to have a museum here mm-hmm. to put these bulldozers in. So that's another vision, to have a museum mm-hmm. there to put the bulldozers in so people can see what they use for the building of Alcan Island.
So are you working a little bit with your Canadian partners on these two efforts? Because it seems like they've kind of got it figured out.
Oh, they're on the way. No, we're in conjunction with Fairbanks, actually.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay,
so
I see.
That's for them to get going on their project, their part, and it's something that they weren't aware. They didn't even know it was there either.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and so they were like, how do you guys know it down there that we have this here? So that's what's going on with us trying to first, you know, because we live here in Anchorage, you know, get the awareness out here, but also to move it to Fairbanks. And the same thing here with the curriculum here in Anchorage. Then when we have ours together, they would like to, say, model it and use it in Fairbanks
right.
as well.
Okay.
So it'll be shared. We're working together, so we're not, I mean, we're all, this is Alaska history for both of us.
Yeah. So you just mentioned a little bit earlier, Gene, that it was 4,000 soldiers, African-American soldiers, mm-hmm. that helped. And I think to provide a little context for that, there were 10,000 soldiers mm-hmm. approximately
right.
total.
11,000.
So that's close to half, which is pretty amazing and astounding that this part of our history has not been brought to light yet.
Right.
So I was hoping, Gene, because you mentioned because you mentioned these particular soldiers, if you could read these three verses right here that really mentions those gentlemen, the ones that have the little squares around them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, those are wonderful, please.
Okay, we don't just honor them for building the highway so that we can drive from here to Nebraska, but we honor them for opening up integration, and it started first in the state of Alaska. Corporal Refined Sims was heading south when he saw the forest fall in the breeze. As he backed up, Private Alfred Jalupka came bulldozing down a group of trees. Because of them doing so well on this project, which is now something that we do know, the United States military became integrated. They were the first government agency to do so.
Thank you. So maybe one of the final questions that I have for you guys today is just what other resources are out there for listeners that want to know more? So we've talked about William Griggs' book, the book that Margie mentioned earlier, and that sounds like it's a new release.
It is. It's December.
December. It was released in December. Mm-hmm. Other resources, so there's a PBS documentary that I stumbled upon, too, in my research. Are there things, other resources that people could go to in addition to your website?
Main ones that really kind of highlight what the African-American soldiers did is the one from the History Channel, that's one, and the one, another one is called Building the Highway. Those two mainly emphasize a lot. There are others out there now that talks about the Alaska Highway, but like Leah Morgan had said, you know, actually they were left out. So there was like maybe one line, or you may see one in the film, one soldier, maybe from the back, African-American soldier, but it was not highlighted like they were there. Okay. It's like it didn't happen.
But these other two sources right. you're talking about actually yeah. do yeah, talk about more, African-American
and
soldiers.
Then and Griggs is up there talking and okay. others. On the website, by the way, there are there's a list
several.
Of other
yes,
books.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
We have that they can go to resources. That's on the website
great.
As well.
And I know photos as well because right. I'm sure a lot of folks are very curious and mm-hmm. would like to see some pictures. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. And one final question for you. So I know you just talked about you guys are looking for support to go maybe back to Canada. So I just wanted to mention yes. that again. Is there a way that folks could support you?
Yes, all they would have to do, we are working with the Anchorage Park Foundation. And therefore, if they're going to make a donation, donate it to the Anchorage Park Foundation and put under the umbrella of Anchorage Park Foundation for the Alaska Highway Project.
Okay, so they can specifically
right.
look
right.
for you
right.
guys and donate to you.
Yes.
Okay.
But then in that way, and there they are, because this is how we did it when Senator Betty Davis, when she was able to get us money so that we could build with the benches.
Yes.
And same thing, the money is actually with the Anchorage Park Foundation, and they then were able to just, you know, take care of it for us. So we haven't even seen anything at all. We know we got it, and they took care of it. Very simple.
That's
like
great.
That's the easiest way to do it.
So we know we want to remind folks that there are the three benches at the Cuddy Family
right.
Park, and
mm-hmm.
they should and folks should go check them out maybe now. Maybe they're buried in snow right now, but
yeah.
at least
check them out in May.
You can see them on the website also, or either yeah.
Tell her about the thing that's going on in May.
Okay, and then on May the 4th, we're having a celebration at the Cuddy Park, and they can see the benches there. Well,
oh, great.
A nice celebration. 12:30 to 2:30.
Okay, that's on May 4th, and so hopefully that'll be on their website as well.
Right.
This has been a great hour. I want to thank my guests, Jean Pollard and Bishop Dave Thomas from the Alaska Highway Project. Next week on Hometown Alaska, join host Charles Wolforth to talk about urban wildlife. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Shelley Wade.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.